Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we are on a Thursday, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. I was nervous watching the fourth quarter last night. The intensity, the desperation was fantastic. 1 hour from now. Yesterday, I delivered my AFC predictions. Today, I deliver my NFC predictions. A lot more drama, a lot more questions in the NFC, where the AFC has really dominant teams at the top in their division. Buffalo, Kansas City, Colts. Joy Taylor is joining me. Yeah, that last night is, you know, between the home run derby and the intensity and the All-Star game and the NBA Finals, not only do we miss sports, athletes miss the fans. Like the fans last night, that building is shaking. The fans are totally into it. The teams are totally into it. I loved how much that game mattered to the Milwaukee Bucks last night.
You know, I don't think we will ever not appreciate a rocking building again. Because I thought the Phoenix fans showed out all throughout the playoffs, but the Bucks are giving them a run for their money. And that Deer District thing.
Oh, it's incredible.
It's not for me. Way too many people. But I'm sure for everyone there, it's a good time.
Well, it was a great game last night. So listen, this is what happens. This is what American sportscasters do. Whoever wins the game, that team's great and their team stinks. I still like Phoenix in the series. Chris Paul played his worst game. And they led by 7 with about 8 minutes to go. And that's with one guy actually hitting shots for the entire roster, Devin Booker. But I think what you're seeing, what I witnessed last night, here's what I witnessed. Ever since the Milwaukee Bucks put Drew Holiday on Chris Paul, it's felt different for Chris Paul. Drew Holiday is big. He is 6'3", 205 pounds. He is big and he's physical. Chris Paul is barely 6 feet tall and 175 pounds. And his production has fallen off a cliff over the last three games. 23 points to 19 points to 10 points. And in those games, he's got 15 turnovers in the last three games. Big, physical, strong Drew Holiday on Chris Paul is showing Chris Paul's age. And we told you a week ago, the Bucks are the older, bigger, stronger, more physical team. If this was in an octagon, it would not last a round. They're starting to wear down the finesse, the thin, the quick, the younger Phoenix Suns. Now, remember, Chris Paul did not play for a couple of games in that Clippers series, right? The COVID protocol. So he came into this series fresh, energized, rested, and the Bucks then decided to put Drew Holiday on him, who's a big, physical, tough guy who plays defense, and Chris Paul looked old last night. We'll get into that more in about 15 minutes. But what you're seeing is the classic NBA chess match. A big physical team with mostly one shooter, Chris Middleton, you trust, against a young athletic finesse team, Phoenix, with a lot of shooters, although only one hit last night. And what's critical here is in the NBA history, the 40 years I've been watching, old teams beat young teams, almost always. Even that Warriors team, which we consider young, you know, Steph was only in year 6 and Klay was young and Draymond was young. Andre Iguodala won an MVP. Remember that? Old Andre Iguodala. And Kevin Durant's got some years on him. So even when you have a young team, veteran players are so crucial. Why? Because when you get late into games and late into series, it's decision-making time. And the young kids get tight. Remember Phoenix against the Clippers? Remember they led 3-1 in that series, went back home to Phoenix, how tight Phoenix was? Now, they won the series. That moment, that night, it was too much. They just were. And last night, Phoenix was great until about 3 minutes to go. And Phoenix got sloppy and a little tight. This is part of the process. So NBA history tells you the old guys beat the young guys. Last year in the bubble, we remarked that it was the only time in my life I'd ever seen old teams peeling off and young teams flourishing, but that was explainable. The bubble had all these old veteran guys away from their kids and families getting depressed. Many players acknowledged that, and the young teams loved it because they were just going and playing video games. It's like AAU basketball, playing hoop, going back to their room. They didn't have the big families. They didn't have a lot of kids. So last year was a weird playoff year. The kids beat the old guys until LeBron and AD won the finals. Miami's a bunch of kids. And then Miami essentially this year reverts back to what happens to the young teams. They're hot and cold, up and down. So the history tells you Milwaukee should win this series. But I think Phoenix is a better team. I think Phoenix is going home. I think this morning, it depends on what fan base you are. If you're Milwaukee's fan base, this morning you're thinking, we're wearing these guys out and we figured them out. And this morning, if you're a Phoenix fan base, you're thinking to yourself, hell, we were up by 7 and one guy on the entire roster was hitting shots. And that's what I believe. I think Phoenix was up 2-1. They were up by 7 points last night. One guy, Devin Booker, was playing well, and Chris Paul was to be awful. It was the worst playoff game he's played. The other thing with Phoenix is they've only got two veterans here, Chris Paul and Jay Crowder. Crowder couldn't shoot last night, although I thought he played well. He couldn't shoot, and Chris Paul was terrible. Phoenix is going to have a hard time beating Milwaukee and winning this championship. Now, Crowder played well but didn't hit his shots. Chris and Jay Crowder need to be really good in these key spots. You cannot rely on kids. This is not the way the league works. Everybody gets tight. And you start looking at that Bucks roster, and Brooke Lopez been in this league over 10 years. Giannis 8, Middleton 8. They're old. They have been through a lot of war. I mean, Giannis and Middleton have been playing together for how many years? 7, 8 years? So I will tell you this. Suns had 17 turnovers. Bucks had 5. I do not think that'll happen again. But we have to be fair here. A lot of those turnovers is because the Suns are fatigued from the Bucks leaning on them. And frankly, the Bucks are physical. And you turn the ball over when people pressurize you and push you and make you uncomfortable. So we've got a chess match. The last 4 minutes, the veteran team that trailed all night, you know, they were behind and they're playing catch up. The veteran team jumped over the young team because that's what veteran teams do at home in big spots. I still like Phoenix, but Chris Paul, the pressure officially on his shoulders. Here's Chris.
Yeah, I had 5 of them. You know what I mean? It was bad decision making. They got, you know, a significant amount more shots than us. And so, you know, for me, I got to take care of the ball. We got 17 turnovers. We shoot the ball too well not to have those opportunities to score.
All right. I still like the Suns, but I think in 7, not 6. All right. We've been talking a lot about the Aaron Rodgers situation. And as we said before, he's going to play this year. What are his options? Hold out and lose a small fortune or play? A.J. Hawk's his friend. A.J. Hawk recently spent a week with Aaron Rodgers in Montana. This has been the summer of Aaron. Aaron's just doing his own thing. Nothing wrong with that. Totally defend him. I think it's good for his mental health. He's gotten away. He's been frustrated. So he hung out with A.J. Hawk. And A.J. Hawk continues to believe Aaron's coming back soon.
He likes to compete. Does that look like a guy that's going to sit out and retire to you? Aaron looks great. He seems mentally in a good spot. What have I said from the start? I said, I don't see him playing anywhere else. That's what I said, right?
Mm-hmm. Day one, you said that.
Yeah, I said, I don't see Green Bay trading him. I don't see that happening. I don't know how it has to work. But, yeah, I still feel like he's going to be in Green Bay.
You know, Aaron's a smart, thoughtful guy. High IQ, pretty high EQ, it appears. I don't know him. Would it kill him to just once admit, I'm a little difficult. I'm a little needy. You all realize the Jordan Love pick made him upset. But 8 years ago, he had teammates and family members calling him out. Remember years ago when he would do Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football and he wouldn't mention his alma mater, Cal? He would mention his junior college? I was told, and people believe inside the building at Cal, it was because Cal fired Jeff Tedford 7 years after Aaron left. 7 years. Like, coaches get fired. 7 years after Aaron left, they fired him. He held a grudge. Now, I can't prove that. There's a story about it I read this morning. But, like, let's not just make this out to be the Jordan Love pick is what set him off. Aaron's been set off for years. He's been difficult for years. Just once, I wish he took that high-powered intellect, that high-powered radar, and turned it on himself. Does everybody realize since Aaron Rodgers took over as a starting quarterback, Green Bay has given him 8 players who have been Pro Bowlers on the offensive line, tops in the NFL. He's been given 2 offensive coaches. He's always had a star receiver, Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, now Devontae Adams, maybe the best receiver in the league. He's got a star running back. Yes, Green Bay can be stuck in its ways. Aren't we all a little? Yes, they can be a little rigid on free agency. Aaron's not rigid. I'm not rigid. Let's not make this about an abusive relationship. I will defend to the end, and I have, quarterbacks who are treated poorly. Matt Stafford, 12 years of dysfunction in Detroit. I'll defend him. Andrew Luck, his first general manager, lost. I defended him. Like, I'll defend that guy. Carson Wentz, I've defended. It appears, although I didn't know it initially, the owner, the GM, the coach, it was a mess in Philadelphia. I spend a lot of days defending quarterbacks who are having to overcome dysfunction. Carson Wentz, Andrew Luck, Matt Stafford. Green Bay is highly functional. 8 Pro Bowlers or all pros on the offensive line. The number one ally of a quarterback since Aaron started playing. I'm not even counting the first few years where he sat in the bench behind Brett Favre. They've given him number one receivers. They've given him offensive coaches. They're always, you know, and they've paid him top of the market. Unlike Brady, he's not taking pay cuts here. He's always paid top of the market. There is a lot of dysfunction in this league. Green Bay's not dysfunctional. They're limited because most pro athletes don't want to live in a tiny, tiny town when you can live in Philadelphia or Los Angeles or Dallas or Atlanta as a single pro athlete. But that's not really their fault. It's just the Packers' reality. But do we all believe if Aaron went to another franchise, he'd suddenly be Mr. Optimistic, Mr. Positivity? We got to be fair here. As smart and as thoughtful as Aaron Rodgers is, could he just once turn that high-powered perception on himself and go, I'm not the easiest guy to get along with. I'll defend Carson Palmer, Matt Stafford. I'll defend these guys in bad situations. That's not the Green Bay situation. And the Jordan Love pick, I said it when they did it. I probably wouldn't have done it, but Bill Belichick drafted like 8 quarterbacks, some in the second round during Tom Brady's tenure, even when Tom was still in his prime, even when Tom was young. I mean, you got to have backups. You got to have quarterbacks. Aaron was 35. Aaron had been hurt a couple of times. Aaron could be difficult. But we just one time, once, that's all I'm asking, not twice, 3, 4, 5 times. Aaron's not the easiest guy either. Not saying I am. Not saying everybody is. But let's put this in context. This is not a highly dysfunctional organization, nor was the Jordan Love pick the first time Aaron had been difficult. All right. What to do with Chris Paul? This is something Joy and I had talked about for the last 2 and 3 weeks, and I'm a Chris Paul devoted fan. I said I thought he should have been the MVP. But sometimes in sports, there's lightning in a bottle. Something happens just briefly. Lightning in a bottle that you can't really duplicate. The Dallas Mavericks 2011, no reason to run it back. It was a once-in-a-lifetime team. What to do with Chris Paul? Because last night, he looked old. Really, really old. We'll talk about that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Cremo presents a complete line of body wash, body bars, Cremo products designed with good uncommon sense. Get it at Amazon or CremoCompany.com, C-R-E-M-O. I use their stuff all the time. Used it this morning, by the way. So what to do with Chris Paul? He was awful last night. This is something we have talked about on this show for the last 3 weeks. Everybody is fawning over Chris Paul, who I had as league MVP. He, Steph Curry, I thought were remarkable, right? Jokic in Denver. But 4 years? No. 3 years? I'm not happy. 2 years? I'd say okay. In that Devin Booker is great and getting better. DeAndre Ayton is really good and getting better, and Mikal Bridges is solid and turning into a good player. That's the future of the franchise. What you want to do in pro sports is pay a player based on what they will do, not on what they've done. Okay, in Hollywood, they give lifetime achievement awards. You can't do that in sports. We have salary caps. You got to pay a player for what he's going to give you, not for what he's done. Plenty of people have paid Chris Paul, including State Farm. He's fine. As the Suns players age, we talked about this. DeAndre Ayton gets paid. Booker becomes a household name and a star. Bigger shoe deal. Do they want older 37, 38-year-old Chris Paul barking at them? The media and most media people have never owned a business, right? So they're always like, just run it back. You got to let those guys defend their title, the Phoenix won. Yeah, at a price. At a price. I'll run the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady back because his salary cap hit this year is $10.5 million. If you pay Chris Paul $28 to $32 million, it creates a different set of issues. Your bench won't nearly be as strong because you got to pay DeAndre Ayton, and you're already paying Devin Booker. So I'm not running it back just to run it back. That's not the way businesses go. And there are also instances in sports where they call it lightning in a bottle. The 2011 Dallas Mavericks. There's no reason to run it back. It was a weird roster. It didn't look like it would work. And it suddenly did, and they won. And the Miami Heat and LeBron James and D-Wade and Chris Bosh got tight, and they won. That's it. That's it. How many playoff series have the Mavericks won since then? I believe it's zero. Okay? You don't have to run everything back. I mean, remember when the Jags got to the AFC Championship with Blake Bortles? And like most lousy franchises, they freaked out and went, let's pay Blake Bortles a bunch of money. He had 23 touchdowns and 11 picks that year. He was still a C-minus quarterback. What are you doing? It was a lightning in a bottle year. There weren't a lot of good teams at the top of the AFC. The defense, because you weren't paying Bortles anything, was totally stacked. And the Jags made a big mistake. We're going to run this thing back. Nobody at that point thought Blake Bortles was a championship-level quarterback. We've had teams like that. You know, Baker Mayfield right now. They have an all-star team around him. I don't know how good it'll be this year. Baker's not Josh Allen. He's not Mahomes. He's not Justin Herbert. I don't think he's Joe Burrow. But you got an all-star team around him because you're not paying him anything. And they weren't paying anybody around Bortles. Bortles didn't make any money. So he had an all-star defense around him. So you start looking at Chris Paul. And let's be honest, there's also the buy low, sell high belief system. He's finally healthy. Everybody in the West isn't and wasn't. Kawhi Leonard got hurt. Anthony Davis got hurt. Jamal Murray got hurt. So there's a lot of things at play here for the Phoenix Suns. I like Chris Paul. I would bring him back. I would love a one-year deal. I would stomach a two-year deal. But the idea, if the Suns win, you got to bring it back. That sounds like somebody who's never owned a business. Sometimes stuff works just in a moment. How many dynasties has the NBA had? Six in the history of the league, like six. And the dynasties now don't even last very long. The Heat are called a dynasty. 4 years, they won two titles. Aren't they really just a good team? I mean, the Warriors kind of felt like a dynasty, more so because they won before Kevin Durant. They won after Kevin Durant. It only lasts a few years. NFL, really, outside of the Patriots, those things last about 3 or 4 years. The Seahawks never won a second title. So the Chris Paul component here is we may just be looking at a perfect year for Phoenix. In fact, they will not be favored next year in the West. As this series progresses, it'll be interesting to see how Chris Paul plays, because I'm watching that last night and I'm thinking, there is no way if I own the Phoenix Suns, I'm giving him four or giving him three. Two I deal with. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, the Bucks evened the finals last night, two games apiece. And one of the big moments in the game was Giannis's block over DeAndre Ayton. It was just over a minute remaining. Devin Booker tossed an alley-oop up to Ayton. Giannis denied him. I think we probably normalize how athletic, like, just how intense this actually was to do. But let's take a listen to the block.
Now Booker with Tucker on him. Throws it up for Ayton. Shot blocked by Antetokounmpo. What a block from Giannis.
It's great.
It's a great block. I don't know why they didn't show the replay at any point. Like, everyone was just sitting there waiting for I'm like, did they not show it because it was like really an egregious foul, or like, why are they not showing this? It was an unbelievably athletic play by Giannis and a great block. Once again, I just beg you to stop comparing every single big block to LeBron's chase down block in game seven of the Cavaliers only championship.
That's the biggest block in NBA history.
I'm not going to say there's a close second because I don't know, and do more research before saying explosive statements like that. But yes, it's absolutely the biggest block in NBA history.
Yes.
Stop comparing every block in every series to LeBron's chase down block in this game. Like, they beat the best regular season team in NBA history to win the first Cavs championship. LeBron goes back to Cleveland. Like, there's so much. And this was in game seven. Like, this is game four.
Yeah, this is the biggest block in my life of watching the NBA. That was the biggest defensive play, arguably, in NBA history. Now, there's been a lot of great Jordan in Utah. There's been a lot of great offensive plays. And those are the ones we remember. This is the big defensive play in the history of the league. That's it.
You know, I was just thinking about this because everyone keeps being so... we're all prisoners of the moment, so I'm not going to say that I don't do this as well. But... you could argue that block was the biggest moment in NBA playoff history.
How about this?
Because the shot was in the first round, like the Michael Jordan shot.
Right.
The infamous shot was in the first round of the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken. And even the Ray Allen shot, and I know Heat fans are going to kill me for this, but it was still in game six. They still had to come back and win another game.
Well,
that block was in game seven.
If you ask me the biggest plays in NBA history that are at the top of my head, it's the LeBron block. It's the Michael Jordan shot kind of pushing off Brian Russell. It is the Magic Johnson hook shot down the lane against the Celtics when he drove the lane and did a hook shot. Those three just jump out to me. Now I'm sure there's other ones, but I'm just saying top of mind, it's the Magic hook against Bird and the Celtics.
I think the game that it is a deciding game in the NBA Finals.
That's huge.
And not that saying these other moments aren't huge, but if you're talking about the most impactful play, it's got to be in a game seven of the NBA Finals to me. And it's got to be something that either saved the game or was a walk-off, the game-winning shot.
You know, it's interesting watching this game last night. Fans always rush to blame the officials. Devin Booker foul.
The officiating was not great. No, on either side.
Now, the reason you have to be careful about crushing refs, and here's the reason why. Because when you get to the NBA Finals, especially into really crucial games, referees tend to back off. They do not want to decide this stuff. Now, it was a foul on Devin Booker. But I've watched this for years and years. Years ago, there was a LeBron-Kevin Durant moment where LeBron was basically riding Durant early. I think Durant was at OKC, and I don't remember exactly, but it was on the baseline, and the refs let it go. You have LeBron and KD, the top two players in the league, on the baseline. The refs are going to let the players decide.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. But there was just like
that was a foul.
How is Booker not in the game? Still in the game?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, that was a foul. By the way, all you fans out there, Phoenix commits 17 turnovers. A ref can't miss a call. I mean, Giannis has missed 50 free throws in the playoffs. A ref can't miss a call. It's a remarkable how fans hold officials and not their own players who cannot hit a free throw accountable.
I'm with you, but I think it was rough on both sides. The Suns are favored by 3.5 in game five, which is Saturday, at 9 Eastern, according to Vox Bet. So Russell Wilson and the Seahawks worked through a rocky offseason, albeit the rocky part seemed very short.
Yeah, it was brief.
In comparison to some of the other rocky offseasons we've been seeing lately. Seems like they're back on the same page, and they have an even better relationship than before.
I would say it's stronger. I mean, I think me and Pete have gotten even closer. Okay. I mean, we've always been super close. So, you know, Pete and I, we've always had a great bond. But I think, you know, we got to have a great heart-to-heart. And just, you know, he's got goals. I have goals. You know, we want to do great things, you know. So to actually, you know, really dive into those and really talk about, you know those missions, those goals, it was fun. So, you know, and so I think you know, me and Coach Carroll's relationship is stronger than ever.
Sometimes you work through things and you come out stronger on the other side.
They do have a personality connection. They're both very positive guys. You know, Pete's very much, you know, live in the moment, high energy Pete Carroll. That is very much Russell Wilson. They're a better match than people give them credit for, or that either privately would want to admit. They are both. When I think of Russell, I'm just like athletic and optimistic. When I think of Pete, I think of defense and like energy.
Yeah.
They're both big energy guys. They both own the room they're in. I mean, I have friends who have played for the Seahawks. Like Greg Olson told me that Pete Carroll is as good as any coach in his career, high school, college, pro. He said Pete Carroll in the weekly meetings is a wizard. He is so.
And he loves it. Like he has the energy.
And he's almost 70. He acts like a four. He wears that gum out on the sideline every game.
You know, it's funny you mentioned what a good pair they are. Because I think I'm thinking of Tom Brady and Belichick. I think that for the major duration of Brady's career, Belichick and Brady were a good pair. Because even though now we're seeing a different version of Brady,
I think
Brady is a good match for Arians at this point in his career.
I think Bill and Brady very much appreciated the intellectual side of the game, and
right.
They were both
and the discipline.
Totally disciplined and also very aspirational.
Yeah.
They both want to be the greatest ever. I think Bill tends to be a little crankier and Tom tends to be a little more joyful as a guy.
Yeah, I'm saying like personality-wise, maybe not, but the principles that they both had matched for the majority of his career. And then once he got all of the rings and wanted a little more flexibility and wanted to do things a little differently and Bill's more rigid, they kind of went their separate ways. And now he's in a new matched situation.
I think Andy Reid and Mahomes now are the template for what you want. You have a very creative, sort of funny, joyful guy who loves football. And you have this very clever, creative quarterback who loves to be fun, but also likes to be creative. I think Mahomes and Andy Reid, the personalities feel very similar to me. By the way, Breeze, intense. Sean Payton, uber intense.
I think your brands kind of have to match.
A little bit.
In order for it to work.
No, I mean, it's a real thing. Like, yeah. It'll be interesting because Urban Meyer's super intense and Trevor Lawrence is very Southern and laid back. Let's see how that thing works out over time.
So Cam Newton, speaking of Belichick, is battling with Mac Jones to be the Patriots' starter this season. And even though, obviously, Mac Jones is there to be the future face of the franchise, Cam fully supported the team's decision to bring in another quarterback.
Let's be honest. I've been playing this game long enough to know, like, that's the right pick. You know, Mac and Cheese is a person who is, ever since I've seen him, has came on into the locker room with the business approach. You know, doing the initiatives of learning his teammates, understanding that, you know, I got to raise my level of play. When Mac was picked, you know, there was no type of ill will because, you know, competition breeds out the best in everybody.
Mac and cheese.
I'm not a huge fan of that. It seems like a kind of lazy, carb-filled.
I mean, I think it was Mac and Cheese Day yesterday. I love mac and cheese.
Wow. Who doesn't?
I don't know if I want mac and cheese to be my nickname, though. So Patriots training camp begins July 28th, and their bye week actually isn't until week 14.
Well, that's a bad bye week. By the way, you know, we talked about, I didn't think Mac Jones was going to play this year. I really didn't. But you look at New England's schedule, there's a lot of W's early. If you're playing with Cam, a veteran, I just don't think you can mess around with Mac Jones in that division. Buffalo's clearly better, and Miami right now to this morning has better personnel than New England. I don't think you can mess around with a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, Belichick's obviously, like, you saw what they did in the offseason in free agency, so that he's not laying down this year. unless Cam is a disaster, or which I don't anticipate, or gets injured, I don't think we're going to see Mac this year.
That's my feeling, but, you know, you hear differently. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line.
Remember,
news.
Top of the hour. Yesterday was AFC predictions. All the divisions and the playoff seeding. Today, in 15, 20 minutes, is the NFC predictions.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches? Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. Joining us now, Rick Bucher, on a crazy Game 4 last night in Milwaukee, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing senior writer, covering the NBA since the early 90s. So, you know, my takeaway on this is Chris Paul looked worn down. Drew Holiday is probably 3 to 4 inches taller, 30 pounds heavier. He's a big physical player. Mike Budenholzer is not known for adjustments, but putting Drew Holiday on Chris Paul, it did look like Chris Paul was worn out last night. Your thoughts?
No question. There's a reason that Drew Holiday is a first-team all-defensive selection this year, along with Giannis Antetokounmpo, and you're exactly right. It's the physicality. It's the willingness to fight over screens. He's made everything hard on Chris, and as a result, it has worn him down. And it's really the Achilles heel of this Phoenix Suns team, because if Chris Paul is not getting his and creating for others, he's really the only playmaker that they have that makes things easier for everybody else, particularly DeAndre Ayton. Ayton's ability to be effective and efficient is hurt in a major way when Chris Paul is having to fight just to protect the ball, just to be able to score. Until last night, Chris Paul has still shot the ball well in the mid-range, has not shot it particularly well from long range, but Drew Holiday is, it's why I refuse any Drew Holiday slander. Yes, he was 4-for-20 last night. Yes, he's had 3 games where he has not shot well in this series, but since taking over the number one assignment on Chris Paul, he has been the primary defender and the primary reason that Chris Paul has struggled, and as a result, so have the Suns.
You know, there's great shooters like Dame or Steph Curry, and then there are guys that are hot and cold like Chris Middleton. And, you know, last night was, I mean, he was bad early, great late. What you know, he is really on this roster of tough guys, thick guys, bruising guys, he's their best shooter. What do you make of last night and Middleton as a trustworthy player in the next 3 games?
It's pretty simple, actually, and it's why I still favor the Bucks to win this series, even though 2 of the next 3 are in Phoenix. And it's because if you're going to give me Chris Middleton and Giannis Antetokounmpo playing pick and roll against Mikal Bridges and DeAndre Ayton, I better win that matchup. I like Mikal Bridges. I think he's a good young player. But this is his first time in the playoffs. And the threat of Giannis as the roller in pick and roll is creating opportunities for Chris Middleton that a good shooter scorer should make consistently. So they really just, this is the matchup. And versus Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton against Drew Holiday and Giannis Antetokounmpo, 2 first-team all-defensive players. I don't want to oversimplify this series, but it really comes down to that. The Bucks' two-man game is an experienced one playing against a relatively inexperienced one, and they're getting it done versus the two-man game for the Suns, with Chris Paul being compromised by Drew Holiday. The matchups simply don't work for the Suns if it comes down to the last minute and in clutch scoring. So, honestly, that's what we saw last night. Middleton did what he should do against someone like Mikal Bridges and with Giannis Antetokounmpo as his running mate.
You know, it's funny. So I pick Milwaukee. We have it on tape to win the whole thing. even though every series they're in, I fall out of love with Milwaukee because they don't make anything look easy. They trailed by 7 late. Yep. I mean, the Phoenix had one guy hitting shots. Crowder couldn't hit. Chris Paul was awful. They led by 7 late. And I'm like, how is this game close? And there is just, and I picked Milwaukee, and I said there's two reasons. One, there's no pressure now. We've dismissed them. They can't win. The second thing is their players mostly in their careers don't get hurt. Everybody else's does. But I do look at Milwaukee, and here's my big concern. Last night is what we're going to see over the next 3 games. And I don't trust Milwaukee at the line, and Chris Paul and Jay Crowder are great playoff free throw shooters. So that to me is a huge – I mean, Crowder's great. Crowder's shooting 86% at the line. That's significantly better than he shot in the regular season at the line, and he was a good free throw shooter in the regular season. Are you concerned about, speaking of simplicity, I don't trust the Bucks at the free throw line late?
Yeah, well, look, this is what the Bucks do. You go into the series, and you just saw them in the last series, and you're thinking, okay – they found their stride. And then they begin the series and you go, wait a minute, what happened to the Bucks that I just saw? Like, why did they start every series? They scare the hell out of you the first 2 games of every series. But they're not an efficient team. And they do run hot and cold. There's just a couple things that they have in this series that works to their benefit that allows them to be inefficient. And the number one thing is this vast advantage on the offensive glass.
Yeah.
I think the difference was 17-5 in last night's game. They've won the offensive rebounding. They've had the offensive rebounding advantage every single game, sometimes by double digits. That just gives you more opportunities to score. So you don't have to shoot as well. You're making Phoenix play defense at least 7-8 seconds longer for 15-16 possessions every single game. And so you don't necessarily have to shoot well, but you're going to get more opportunities to score. And chances are when you offensive rebound, you're right there for a putback, so your percentage and your opportunity to score is going to go up. So that's why, that's what counteracts the fact that, yeah, you do have a Giannis Antetokounmpo going to the free throw line, and that could potentially be problematic. But the other part is that Jay Crowder, like most every other piece on this team other than Devin Booker, relies on Chris Paul to create his opportunities. And when Chris Paul is just fighting not to lose the ball because of the pressure that Drew Holiday is putting on him, then that makes all the difference in the world. Suddenly, Jay Crowder, yes, had 15 last night, but went, 3-for-9, didn't shoot a high percentage. Jay Crowder is great, veteran player. He's going to do what is going to take advantage of the opportunities you present him. But Chris Paul is really the guy who makes everything happen, and he's just trying to make it happen for himself right now.
Only 90 seconds left, but Rick, it is interesting. When you watch Chris Paul last night and he looks old, we've discussed this on this show for 2 to 3 weeks now. I'm not giving him a 4-year deal. I'm reluctant to give him a 3-year deal. It's lightning in a bottle. Yeah. It works perfectly for this team and this coach in this moment, but I watched that last night, and I think Robert Sarver's watching that thinking, I don't know if I want to write a $120 million check, right?
Yeah. No, you're right at the nexus, because I believe that it's going to be the fight is going to be 2-year deal. Is it a 3rd-year player option or team option? And how much are you going to load up on the first 2 years? And I dare say that whether they win or lose this series is going to have an influence on the attractiveness of just exactly how much you pay him.
Right.
But you're going to have to eat at least a year.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to eat a big number on a 3rd year if it means that you won a title. You'll sacrifice that for a title. If you're the runner-up, it's a lot harder to swallow that.
No, it's a very good point. And it's, you know, listen, we got to be honest about this. It's a salary cap sport. You want to pay people for what they'll do, not what they did. And with Chris Paul, you watched last night and you're like, that's old furniture right there. Like that is not raising in value. Rick Bucher, great stuff. Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Yeah, it is. It does feel like Phoenix. Now, I think Phoenix will be very good for years, but they won't be favored in the West next year. And Chris Paul, in this moment, it absolutely perfectly works. But, you know, again, running teams back is great when Tom Brady has a cap hit of $10 million. You run it back. But now you're asking me to pay somebody who's past their prime. I'm paying him for what he did, 28, 30 million. That means the bench isn't as good. And that means Chris has to play more minutes, and that kind of compounds the situation. All right, top of the hour. Yesterday, I unveiled my AFC predictions. I went 7-for-7 last year on AFC playoff teams. NFC is significantly tougher. New coaches, new systems, new quarterbacks on new teams. That is coming up. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of the first year automatically and with no limit. Get used to hearing yes. Discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report. Limitations do apply. NFC predictions live in LA next.